Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Wednesday, February the 13th, and we got a great show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I'll be joined by Alex Donald from 560 WQAM in Miami. He is the co-host of the Dono and Frito show, which can be heard every day between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on 560 WQAM, and of course you can listen online at the WQAM website. And we talk all things Miami Dolphins. We talk about the hiring of Brian Flores and what to expect there. We talk about the Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross, as well as Kyler Murray, and a plethora of other topics surrounding the Miami Dolphins as we head into the part of the offseason here with the draft and free agency. So it was a great conversation with Alex, but we will talk to him in a bit. The one thing I want to talk about before that is I really haven't done a Ricky Williams update in a while. And for those of you who have been following along, Ricky Williams has made it to the end of Celebrity Big Brother. And, every few shows or so, I do an update on this. And for those of you who aren't watching, you're going to want to tune in tonight, Wednesday night, to the season finale of Celebrity Big Brother. Ricky Williams made it to the final five, and tonight they will take that final five down to the champion. And, there's a very good chance Ricky's going to win this thing. Ricky won the final head of household, which means he won't be eliminated first tonight, which means he's in the final four, actually. So right now they're at the final five, but since he won the final head of household, he can't be evicted first. So he's in the final four, and, there's a very good chance he's going to actually win this thing. And at the start of the show, when I talked about it a little bit, I go, I don't know if he had a good chance here. Because the first few episodes, he really wasn't talking to anybody. He was wearing his sunglasses, just sort of walking around the house, not really playing the game, I guess you could say. But shortly after, he did pick things up, and he's been making a lot of moves. And there's a good chance that Ricky Williams could win Celebrity Big Brother. I say it's probably, out of the final five, I'd say Ricky's probably got a 33% chance. Because, he played a heck of a game. And for those of you who don't even know what I'm talking about, Celebrity Big Brother started about 3 weeks ago. It's sort of a watered-down version of the real game of Big Brother, which airs on CBS all summer. And as I said, I'm a diehard fan of the real game. The celebrity version is just nothing special. This year I was more into it because Ricky Williams is on. And Ricky, say what you want about him, love him or hate him, he's an interesting guy. And he's an interesting guy to listen to. He's an interesting guy to watch. And when you put him in a house with, 8 or 9 other people that he has to live with, it's just interesting. And I will say, Ricky has lived up to the hype. He's an interesting guy. When he starts talking about astrology and starts talking about his yoga, the guy he's a little out there with some of his thoughts and beliefs, but you don't turn the channel because you want to hear what he's going to say next. And, congrats to him. He's made it to the end of this game. And like I said, there's a very good chance he's going to win this thing. And if he does win this thing, look, I know most people probably aren't watching this. I know most people don't even know what Celebrity Big, what the show even is. But if he wins it, this is good. He will be, headline news here for about 48 to 72 hours. You're going to see him on every show. He's going to be in every newspaper that you see online. He's going to be on websites. I mean, he's going to be a big deal if he does win this thing. And Ricky Williams might be back in the headlines, but this time for something very positive, in that he might be the champion of Celebrity Big Brother. So if you haven't been watching, you might want to tune in at least to the season finale tonight, Wednesday night on CBS. I think it starts at 8. I think it was 8 to 10. It might start at 9, though. I'm not sure, but I think it starts at 8. So you're going to want to tune in next night. And if you have been watching all along and following along, I'm sure you're going to tune in because it's just been, you know, it's been a fun show to watch. It's a light show. It's a fun show. It's one of those shows where you don't have to put in a lot of thought. So after a long day's work or a hard day's work, or you have to put the kids to bed, and they've been screaming and fighting all night. You know, it's one of those shows you can just sit down on the couch, turn it on, and not have to think. And it's light, it's fun, it has some laughs, and, you know, he might win this thing, Ricky, and if he does, you know, good for him. Because it's also not one of those shows where if a celebrity wins, all the money goes to a certain type of charity. No, if he wins this, Ricky, he wins legit $250,000 he keeps. It ain't going no charity. It's going right in his pocket. So these guys on this show are out there to play. And I think the final five are Lolo Jones, who's an Olympian, Ricky Williams, Dina Lohan, who's the mother of Lindsay Lohan. This one girl who's on one of those Real Housewives shows. I have no idea which one I don't watch yet. And there's another girl who's like a rapper type singer who I really don't know who she is either. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I think Ricky's got a good chance to win, so it might be something to turn into tonight on this Wednesday night if you got nothing else going on. So right now I'm going to take a quick break. And after the break, I'll be joined by Alex Dono from 560 WQAM to talk all things Miami Dolphins. So sit tight, and we'll be back after this.
Sinbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get authentic Miami Dolphins signed memorabilia. Sinbad Sports has had the likes of Albert Wilson, Kiko Alonso, Frank Gore, Jakeem Grant, Rashad Jones, Ricky Williams, and Cam Wink in for recent autograph signings. So when you're in South Florida, go ahead and visit Sinbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com say.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Alex Dono, one half of the 560 WQAM morning show, the Dono and Frito show. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. I hope you're doing well.
I am doing fantastic. So let's talk some Miami Dolphins football as you host a show every day between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on 560 WQAM. There's been a lot of news with the Miami Dolphins, as there always seems to be this time of year. They recently let go of head coach Adam Gase. What were your thoughts, and were you surprised they let go of the head coach Adam Gase?
No, not at the time when they let him go, honestly. If you had asked me 2-3 weeks prior to his dismissal, if I'd be surprised if he was let go, I would have said yes. But I just thought the way those final few games transpired, and I thought it was pretty clear he had lost the locker room a little bit. So I wasn't shocked by it. And honestly, I'm really torn on what the future of Adam Gase is going to look like, because I covered him pretty closely for the three seasons that he was here. And especially in the first two seasons, I really felt like, man, this guy can be special. This guy is really intelligent. This guy understands football. He's 1,000% dedicated to studying film. He doesn't really even seem to have a life outside of football. You know, Adam Gase is one of those guys where it would not surprise me if his second or maybe third job, if he gets that far as a head coach, he ends up winning big and really succeeding. I think this may just be a case of you know, him, his first job being at Miami. This is a guy who probably needed to get fired, needed to learn from some mistakes before he succeeds somewhere else. As a Dolphin fan, I hope that doesn't happen with the New York Jets. I hope that it would be his third job where he finds success.
Yep,
but
yep.
I really honestly, I can't say that, you know, after week 17, I can't say I was surprised that he was let go. I think it was time.
Yeah, I'm right there with it. And the thing with Gase, I was the same way. Year one, and even most of last year, he sort of got a free pass because once Tannehill went down, everyone's like, well, you know, who could have saw that coming? And he really didn't have a guy. He had to go out there and sign Jay Cutler. So he almost got a pass in year two. But it seemed like the more time he spent in Miami, it was just like, you know, you saw the real guy over time. And by the end of this year, you know, it seemed like he was almost – kind of aware what was happening around him at times, like in the game against the Jets when Rashad Jones just takes himself out of the game. And they ask him after the game, what happened? He goes, I don't know. I mean, you're the head coach. Even if you don't know, lie. You know what I mean? Lie to the cameras. Say, it's internal. We're going to take care of it. He wasn't even smart enough to do stuff like that. And then at the end of the year, you know, he's pointing the finger at everyone else. He's hiring all of his friends on his staff. It just seemed like to me the wheels came off. And I don't have much faith with him at the Jets. But I think as long as he's got Peyton Manning in his corner picking up the phone for him, he's always going to have a job in this league, I think. And maybe always as a head coach, because there's always going to be some team that will sort of fall for it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, really, because you brought something up there with hiring his friends. I think that was one of the two biggest factors that led to him failing in Miami. I think number one for Adam Gase was his insistence on putting all of his eggs in Ryan Tannehill's basket, I thought was a fatal error for him. You know, for riding or dying with Ryan Tannehill, I thought was probably the number one factor in costing him his job. And then just the way that he handled his defensive coordinators, you know, I know that, you know, for whatever reason, Vance Joseph actually parlayed the first year. I don't know how he parlayed having one of the worst defenses in the league to becoming a head coach, a job he's already fired from in Denver. But I don't know how he managed that. And then after Vance Joseph leaves, you elevate Matt Burke, who, you know, Matt Burke, to me, I don't know, he might be a really good position coach, like as a linebackers coach. Yep. But as a defensive coordinator, there was no ability to adapt to his personnel. Like, he had this, you know, Ivy League caliber scheme that he just insisted on, oh, the guys have to learn to play my way. I didn't see any adaptation whatsoever. And I thought that Gase insisting on, you know, being in the Matt Burke business and being in the Ryan Tannehill business were probably the top two things that cost that dude his job.
Yep, absolutely. And it'll be fun to watch how he handles the press up in New York. Because this past year in South Florida, you know, he got into some spats with some of the guys. He was yelling at Armando a couple times. He was yelling at so-and-so a couple times. It'll be interesting to see when, if he gets off to a rocky start, or if they go through, you know, a month where they go 1-3, which will probably happen. You know, the press up there, you know, is a lot different than what he's going to face South Florida. So that's going to be fun to watch from, you know, far away at least, because I think that might happen. And it'll be interesting to see how he does in New York. I don't think he's I don't know if he's a head coach. I think he's a guy who just wants to run his offense at the end of the day. And he's just an offensive guy, and he's trying to be a head coach. But it'll be fun to watch. Miami has now moved on and hired Brian Flores. You know, it's tough to get excited about a hire like this. Obviously, the guy comes with a great resume. He's coming off a great year, a great Super Bowl. But we've sort of been down this road before with guys like Joe Philbin, where everyone said, oh, you know, he helped make Aaron Rodgers. And then we came through it with head coach Adam Gase. Oh, you know, he helped make Peyton Manning, which is a joke. And then we came through it with Tony Sperano and all these guys who were first-time head coaches who came in with great resumes. But then when they got the job, they sort of fell on their face a little. So what are your thoughts here with Brian Flores? Is it sort of being cautiously optimistic?
Yeah, very much. I really like what I've seen and heard from Brian Flores so far. But I think what makes this situation so complicated is, like, if I'm led to believe, if I'm going to believe all these reports about tanking and about roster construction, that it's a really awkward situation that Flores is entering, right? Where I think especially the next 2 years to me are more about what Chris Greer does than what Brian Flores does, right? It's like, absolutely. So Brian Flores, you basically, you've got this guy in place as a placeholder for, you know, and I hope Brian Flores ends up being the next great Miami Dolphins coach of the future, but you're kind of expecting this guy to lose for the next 2 years. And hopefully he doesn't lose in such spectacular fashion that he becomes a sacrificial lamb. You know, if Stephen Ross's mission is to maybe win two or three games next year and win three or four games the year after that, so you can compile great draft picks, high first round picks, and maybe, you know, trade some picks for future picks, trade some players for future picks. You can make that roster really good for like 2022. Hopefully Flores is able to be around to actually see that roster. Hopefully this organization has the patience to grow with Brian Flores, But you know what? That might not be the worst thing in the world. Because, you know, Flores, for all the experience that he has rising up through the Patriots organization as a scout and then coaching a lot of different positions on the defense to finally being the play caller last year, he's never been a head coach before. So maybe the chance to give him a couple of years of experience with virtually no pressure whatsoever, because, again, this team is not expected to be a playoff contender, that might not be the worst thing in the world, because it's not like you're thrusting a first-time head coach into a spot where he's got to make the playoffs right away and you've got to, you know, contend to win the AFC East or win the conference. So, you know, hopefully in 2021 or 2022, we're saying, you know what, Brian Flores is the right man for this job. Finally, we've got a good roster for him to actually coach up, because to me, he exhibits a lot of traits for what I think can be an excellent head coach. Very level-headed, very intelligent. You know, he can take some risks with his play calling defensively. You know, I think he understands what it means to build a great defense. Hopefully he understands what it takes to build a great offense as well. I like what I see out of Flores, and I think cautious optimism is the right way to approach it, because we probably won't really see what Brian Flores is capable of as a head coach until 2 or 3 years down the road.
Absolutely. And the one thing that you mentioned, which will be interesting to see, everyone says they have patience, whether it's the owner, whether it's the GM, but talk to Hugh Jackson with the Browns, because they said the same thing to him. We're going to take this roster. It's going to be gutted. You're going to have some tough, you know, and when they were like 1-31, they're like, patience are up, because you can have patience for so long, but you still got to win somewhat, you know. So if he wins, say, 3 or 4 games this year, and then year two he wins 3 or 4 games, and his record is, you know, 6-26, you know, people aren't going to have patience. I don't even think the owner would say, I mean, it's a tough line to walk, because you're right. They do sort of have to rebuild this whole roster and sort of have it built the right way, which is run off some of these guys who are a little bit older, who have larger contracts, but you still want to win some along the way. You might not want to win a lot, but you got to win some, or else people just don't see the progress. So it's right. A tough line to walk. And I'm wondering if Flores is the guy who will help sort of put the ship on course, and then they go hire the real guy to sort of take him to the next level. And that wouldn't shock me at all. And someone like Flores might actually be sort of a sacrificial lamb in some ways.
Well, and I think why that's incredibly true, what you say there, is because it's easy to say right now, before he's actually coached a season, that we're going to have patience with Flores, yeah, that we're okay losing the next couple of years. But the problem is, even if it's kind of your plan to be, you know, 2-14 bad the next couple of years, when you have a season that poor,
it's tough.
You're going to lose the locker room. People will start to turn on each other in the coaching staff, and players will start to turn on the coaches. Like, it's really hard to say, okay, we expect you to lose Brian Flores, but then we also expect everyone to like you after you're coaching a 2-14 team, even if it's not your fault that they're that bad. Yep. I've been around losing teams before. Like, I covered the Dolphins in 2007 when they went 1-15, and it becomes a really miserable place to be around.
Awful.
I mean, you have some guys who just kind of check out mentally, other guys who are like fighting and arguing. Like, I think even if it's like you're part of your plan to be really bad, it doesn't mean you're not going to have players turn on coaches and coaches turn on each other. So it could be a really tough spot for Flores to be in.
Yeah, and you also have a owner who is 78 years old, and he might be he is sitting there today, and I believe 100% he's on board with this plan. But when it's November 1st and you have a home game against, you know, Cincinnati, and you got nobody in the stadium, and he's sitting up there in the owner's box, he is not going to be happy, because now he's not making money. So he is not going to be happy. So everyone can say the right things now, but when you're actually in the midst of it, it is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, I'm seeing these last couple of days that it looks like the Dolphins are going to, you know, play the Cowboys on the road on Thanksgiving Day.
Why ruin my holiday? Why? I don't need to see the game on that day.
And also, like, yeah, not only might that ruin our Thanksgiving, but, like, I don't understand why the NFL thinks that's a good idea.
Exactly.
You know, I don't see what the appeal of a Dolphins team next year. Like, again, I'm on board with this plan for
Me
the
too.
Dolphins. If the tanking thing is true, I'm on board with it, because I've been enough I've been around, you know, a mediocre or worse team for the better part of two decades. If they've got to be really bad before they get really good, I'm patient enough to deal with that because I've been through two decades of not good enough Dolphins football. But I think the result is this November, it's not going to be fun watching that team on Thanksgiving.
No, not at all. And I said that on yesterday's show I recorded. Please, I hope the NFL makes a change. I mean, why ruin my – I mean, if I got to sit there and then watch, you know, watch a team like the Cowboys put up, you know, a ton of points, and every time they score, shoot up to the owner's box, and he's up – he's going to be up there cheering and dancing Jerry Jones. I don't need to see that against – not that day, at least. If they want to play in week 1, week 10, week 16, that's fine. Just not that week. I don't need to see it that week. What are your thoughts on the owner here, Mr. Ross? Because I think he gets kind of a bad rap. And I think, you know, he's a guy who will spend whatever it takes to win. And for the most part, yeah, when he first took over the team, he might have had some missteps. But of late, you know, he was loyal to Jeff Ireland probably a little bit too long, but he was still loyal to him, and he let him do his thing. Tannenbaum, same way. Should he have hired him? Probably not, but he was. But he let him do his thing. He sort of stays out of it, and he just writes the checks, which, for me, that's what you want out of a guy who owns a team. What are your thoughts on him as an owner?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think he gets a bad rap just because fans want to blame somebody.
Exactly.
It's hard for me to criticize Stephen Ross a whole lot when, you know, in this same city, the Marlins had an owner like Jeffrey Loria for 15 yep. years. Like, I think any South Florida sports fan should understand just how much worse it can be. I think to me, like, Stephen Ross just, you know, he's not a football expert. I think that there are very few owners out there who are as, you know, benevolent as Mr. Ross, being willing to cut checks, being, you know, willing to not meddle with their football people, but then are also football experts. I think that's a very rare combination to find. And so, yeah, like, he's made some mistakes, but he also inherited kind of a crappy situation. It's not like, Wayne Huizenga had the team in tremendous shape when he pulled Stephen Ross. Like, I can understand, like, if he had bought the team from Joe Robbie and the team was in tremendous shape and he put them in the gutter, I could see being mad at Stephen Ross. You know, there's been a lot of trial and error on his part, right? I mean, he's made some bad hires from the Jeff Irelands of the world. You know, the Tony Sperano's and the Joe Philbin's, like, there have been a lot of decisions from Stephen Ross that haven't worked out. What I really respect here is that Stephen Ross, who, like you mentioned, is 78 years old. He, you know, you would have thought these last few years that he doesn't have a whole lot of patience when you see, you know, the Ndamukong Suh type deals and Mike Wallace going a couple of years before that. I think he had always operated under the assumption that we're one or two really good free agents away from being a Super Bowl contender. And I think part of that trial and error process, he eventually came to the realization that, yeah, I kept signing these really expensive free agents thinking that this would be the guy who gets us over the hump. But it turns out we weren't one or two players away. We were probably 15, 20 players away. And the only way to really make this right is to blow it up and start from scratch. And even though it probably took him a few years too long to figure that out, I can respect the fact that he's finally figured it out, because I think this approach is the right way to look at things from a Dolphins standpoint. And I do respect the fact that he's now going through a rebuild when I never thought that was in his DNA to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at a guy like that who in every bit of his life has been successful. He's done tremendous work with the Rise. He's done tremendous work with the Miami Dolphins. Probably raised money for to fight. What's that? What's their one fundraiser? The Miami Dolphins Cancer Challenge and all that stuff. He's done tremendous work.
Yeah.
He's done tremendous work off the field, like with Rise and all that stuff. It's just this one aspect of it he hasn't been able to get right. And you have to think back when he first took over the team. If he was able to land Harbaugh, you know, the whole history of this team would have been rewritten the past 10 years or so. And that one move that he wasn't able to land Harbaugh when, you know, did he handle it right? No, but he had the guy right. He just wasn't able to land him. It would have changed the history of this franchise, you know, for the past 10 years, probably.
Yeah. And in the business world that he comes from, there's a lot more certainty that, you know, if I hire this CEO or I hire, you know, this developer, that this is someone guaranteed. If I just cut the check and bring this guy in, he's going to turn my company into a winner. The problem is there's so many more variables in sports, right? Like if you think, oh, if I just cut, you know, a $100 million check to Ndamukong Suh, he's going to fix this immediately. Or, you know, if I bring in Mike Tannenbaum, he's going to right the ship. And unfortunately, there are so many more variables when you're talking about football. Like there are no guarantees out there that if you bring in a certain executive or a certain player, they're going to right the ship immediately. And I think that in the real estate world, if you have the check to cut and you can bring in the best VP or the best developer out there, he's going to for sure turn around your business. Unfortunately, there's a lot more to it in football. And I think it's one of the, you know, and he's spoken about this in interviews before. I think that was what has really struck Stephen Ross in the 11 or so years that he's owned the Miami Dolphins was, you know, this is just so much more unpredictable than the real estate world is, because, you know, there are certain guarantees. If I make moves in my other businesses, I know that this move is going to result in a certain amount of guarantee to winning. But in football, there are no such guarantees.
Yep, absolutely. And the Miami Dolphins are in the market for a new quarterback. Whether they take someone in this year's draft or next year's draft, we won't know, obviously, for a bit. But the one name that's constantly linked to Miami, it seems like, is the quarterback from Oklahoma, Kyler Murray. And, you know, you go online, and the people who are the quote-unquote online scouts, I call them, because they watch YouTube videos and try to break stuff down. Not like the real scouts, but they're in love with them. And they praise him. And honestly, I think the only other person aside from me who isn't in love with him would probably be Antoine Staley, who I have on this podcast every week. I think it's just him and me who aren't in the camp of people who are in love with Kyler Murray. What are your thoughts on Murray? Because to me, I think the size is an issue with him. I mean, if he's only 5'10", 180, 190, I mean, I'd be very worried to spend a first-round pick on him and be invested in him for the next 2-3 or more years. What are your thoughts on Murray?
Yeah, the height doesn't worry me as much as the frame, like you throw out there. And I guess at the combine is when we'll really find out like how heavy he is. We'll find out how tall he really is. Like just like 5'9" doesn't bother me that much. You know, I know that Russell Wilson is about 5'11", and that scared some people when he came out. But Russell Wilson was like 215 pounds. Like he was built like a linebacker. You know, even though he was short. With Kyler Murray, like he's short and he's slight of frame. I think it's super risky. It's super risky. Yes. I don't automatically discount him just because, you know, I watched him in college. He was tremendous at Oklahoma. But the other side of that is, like, Oklahoma had by far the best O-line in the country. Like, it wasn't even close. The protection he had was impeccable at Oklahoma. You know, you throw him on, you know, 2/3 of the NFL teams that don't have great O-lines like that, and you're putting his body at risk. I've just got to hope that if Chris Greer decides that they want to draft that guy, if he's there at 13, or if they don't think he's going to be there at 13, if they actually trade assets to move up, take him in the top 10, I hope you're 1,000% sure. Like, I hope you are really in love with that prospect, and, like, you're not drafting him because he's going to sell jerseys and sell tickets, that you're drafting him because you put in thousands of hours of study. You've talked to people who have coached him at every level. You've interviewed the player 1,000 times, and you're sure that he's special enough to overcome the physical limitations. You know, if they really do their homework and they go out of their way to draft him, I'm going to be cautiously optimistic that they know what they're getting into, but it is really super risky. You know, aside from, you know, watching him play 6 or 7 times at Oklahoma, I'm not going to say I'm an expert on all things Kyler Murray. I know he's super exciting and super fun to watch, and he would probably be, you know, the most special player the Dolphins have drafted in a really, really long time. I just hope that if they decide that's their franchise quarterback, that they are 1,000% sure that they, you know, if they do like a pros and cons like column, you draw like a line between a piece of paper. I hope that the pros vastly outweigh the cons, because it is super risky to draft that kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're Chris Greer, this is your first big move, because now he's got all the power. There's no Mike Tannenbaum to blame. I mean, he's got all the power. As your first big move, that's a big roll of the dice, I think. I think that's a big roll of the dice. And I'm not sure he wants to make that type of gamble. I mean, we're going to find out, obviously. But because if you take away the height and the weight and all that stuff, he checks every box as a quarterback. He's got everything you want. except for the height and the possible weight. So it's going to be really fun to watch and see how this plays out. But if you're Chris Greer, is your first big move, man, that might be a risky one. And I don't know if he wants to take that type of risk, because if that does not pan out, I mean, that just seals his fate. I mean, and I don't know if he's the type of guy you want to do that with.
You know, and everything's risky when you think about it, because people talk about, you know, 2020, that's when you want to get your quarterback. But it's like, okay, are we really positive that Tua Tagovailoa is the slam dunk prospect that we think he is? Because, you know, he looks really bad in the national championship game. He didn't look good.
And against Georgia.
I was going to say, before he got hurt in the Georgia game, he didn't look good. Because this is another quarterback where as soon as he faced actual pressure, he did not look like the same player. And I get it that, like, no quarterback is as good under pressure. But I thought there was a stark difference in Tua. He was actually facing a pass rush versus when his jersey was cleaned for a full game. So that one's risky. You know, Justin Herbert, I've not watched quite as much. But, you know, people are just assuming that a year from now he's going to be a slam dunk top five type of pick. You know, when you're trying to project – like a top five quarterback a year in advance, like, so much can change between now when these guys come out. You don't know what kind of injuries they might face. Like, in the face of Tua, what if, you know, on the off chance, what if he decides to return to Alabama for his senior year? I'd be surprised if he did that, but crazier things have happened. Nobody thought that, like, Matt Barkley or Matt Leinart would play an extra year, and both of those guys back in the day.
Same thing with Peyton Manning.
Oh, that's a great one. So everything is risky. I think that, you know, one of the things that concerns me about the whole tanking talk for 2020 is, like, how can you really guarantee me that a couple of these quarterbacks coming out in 2020 are as good as you think they are? So I think all this to say, you're 1,000% right when you say the risk for Chris Greer, because, you know, his regime now is the Dolphins football czar, where he's not working under anybody at this point. He's not answering to anybody other than Stephen Ross. He's going to be defined by what franchise quarterback he selects. And there are some major cons to a lot of his options coming up.
Yeah. And the one guy who I like the best, and once again, I'm not a guy who's sitting here watching all the film breaking down stuff, is a kid from Missouri, Locke. Cause I think with Locke, he was the guy, when you're at a school like Missouri in the SEC, you know, every week when you're playing the teams like Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Florida, you're always the underdog, and you're always on the field with lesser talent around you. And if you look at his numbers in those games, you know, his numbers are very good. And that's a real conference. That's a real conference. And his numbers, you know, he was between 3,500 yards and 4,500 yards. He was around, you know, 25 to 35 touchdowns. And he was only throwing some years, 8 interceptions, 10 interceptions. Again, he's the underdog in all those games with lesser talent around him. I think in the NFL, that will sort of translate the best. Again, I'm not one of these guys, but I just think he's the guy I like the best, and I would be very intrigued if he landed in Miami somehow, some way. I don't know. They probably have to slide up and grab, but he's the one guy who intrigues me because his numbers in college are there, and he's in a real conference where he's got, you know, he's at Missouri. Not exactly a big powerhouse.
I liked a couple of the anecdotes that came out of him from the Senior Bowl. Like, he was really starstruck when he met Dan Marino, who was there with the Dolphins. I love the fact that you've got, like, a 22, 23-year-old kid who actually appreciates Dan Marino and wasn't even really old enough to watch him play. Yep. The fact that he could be starstruck by a guy who's, you know, prime, his career was well before he was old enough to even watch football. That was something that did resonate for me. So at least he understands the history of this organization.
Yep. Last question for you. You obviously host a show every day in South Florida. Right now, out of the four major teams in South Florida, between the Heat, the Panthers, Marlins, and the Miami Dolphins, I've been throwing the Hurricanes. Let's toss in the Hurricanes. Which team right now, I don't want to say the most popular, but I guess that's the only way to word it. What team is the number one team that sort of owns South Florida? Is it the Heat still, just because it's Wade's final year? But they're really not having a great year. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like an average year for them. What team sort of moves the needle in South Florida right now?
You know, I think overall I still think it's the Dolphins. You know, I know
too.
That. Yeah,
it's kind of funny because they don't win.
It's funny. It's true, but I think that the fact that they've been around forever, you know, essentially, I mean, you know, 1966 for as far as this town goes, that's forever. I think that they just have that brand resonates with so many different generations. Now, like if you're talking about millennials, it's definitely the Heat.
Yeah.
Right? I think that
Absolutely.
Anyone like really under 30, you know, they, you know, people of that age, young adults, they grew up with the Heat just setting the standard and winning championships. But
you can't blame them either. Yeah.
No, you can't. But I think overall, if you're talking about like people between the ages of like 10 and like 80, I think it really is the Dolphins that own this town. I think that probably the Hurricanes football team probably has like the most hardcore, like smaller group of fans. Like they're very vocal, very passionate on social
yep.
media. You know, obviously the Panthers don't draw that much just because hockey's not that big down here. They have like a few thousand. And I love hockey. I love the Panthers, but I understand that it's certainly not the majority of the city. You know, the Marlins have a lot of angry fans that are just
yeah.
bitter about the way the last couple of decades have gone. So I think if you're going like over the course of all generations, I do think the Dolphins own this town.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. It's tough to make hockey work in Florida unless the team wins big. I mean, it's just tough to
right.
make hockey in Florida is just something that's not really a mix. You got the Marlins. They've been a mess, it seems like, for so long now. And the Heat, you know, are the Heat, and they've won a lot of late, but it's going to be tough now with, obviously, Wade, he'll be moving on, and LeBron's not coming back. So it's like the Heat
yeah.
are sort of – they're going to be sort of in that sort of territory like the Knicks here coming up where it's like, yeah, you're there, but – and you have a name, but what have you really done? So, yeah, it's probably still the Dolphins, which is kind of amazing because they've won absolutely nothing. It seems like forever, but they're still the team of South Florida, Alex.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they really are. And I think it's going to take, it may really take a generation to change that. You know, I think if Pat Riley can, you know, pull another rabbit out of his hat, you know, before he retires, like if he, you know, the summer of 2020, when they finally have some money to spend, like if he can build another championship caliber team, then maybe the Heat would, you know, within a few years surpass the Dolphins. But yeah, I think that there's something to be said about a brand name that's been around for over 50 years. I think the Dolphins do own this town.
Yep, I'm right there with you. So thanks so much for a few moments of your time tonight, Alex. Everyone, be sure to follow Alex on Twitter at Alex Donno, D-O-N-N-O. And also listen to him on 560 WQAM every day between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on the Dono and Frito Show. Alex, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. I had a good time, and go Dolphins.
Yes, go Dolphins.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.